Let's go ahead and study from the Word of God today. We're in 1 Samuel chapter 15. We're going to roll back a little bit to verse number 10 to get our context. This is right after the Amalekite War, which I suspect happened the spring following, the spring and summer that followed the second year of King Saul and his campaign against the Philistines, because he is doing his best to clear foreign problems out of the territory of the Holy Land. But he's doing it by his standard. So when God sends him after the Amalekites to eradicate them because they are under God's execution, Saul decides to do things his way. And this is all a very good indication that Saul is not a good man. He started out with a little bit of humility, it seems like, at the very beginning, and at least some sort of basic devotion to God, but he's very quickly turning into a bad guy. He's turning into a tyrant and turning into a rebel against the Word. And that's not good. And that's why God comes and speaks to Samuel about him after the Amalekite debacle. 1 Samuel 15:10. The word of he who is came to Samuel. I regret, and the word in Hebrew has got the idea of an exasperated sigh. All parents have done it, right? So here's God saying, I sigh over the fact that I made Saul king, for he has turned back from following me and has not performed my commandments. So God is not happy with King Saul, and that makes Samuel upset. The English Standard Version says, and Samuel was angry, and he cried to he who is all night. That's probably a little too specific in the emotion department. The word has the idea of a strong negative emotion, but I think it's more the idea that Samuel is frustrated by the fact that he has been the promoter of Saul as king for these last 2, maybe 3 years. And so if God is going to get rid of Saul, that is going to, in Samuel's mind, kind of make him look bad in front of the people. I think that's the emotion that's driving Samuel's reaction here. So he cries out to God all night long. What does he cry about? He probably asked God to give Saul more time, work with him, let him maybe find his way to a right relationship. But it all finishes with an instruction that Saul is to get a message from God through Samuel. And so now Samuel is on his way to deliver that very strong message. Verse 12. Samuel rose early to meet Saul in the morning. It was told Samuel, Saul came to Carmel. Now, this is not the mountain range up in the north. This is Carmel down in the south. I think it's about 10 miles south of Hebron. So it's in the region where Saul finished up his Amalekite war. So Saul, this is the report Samuel gets. Saul came to Carmel, and behold, he set up a monument for himself. And then he turned and he passed on. He went down to Gilgal. So he sets up a war monument celebrating his victory at Carmel. And then he heads off to Gilgal down in the Jordan Valley, where he's going to kind of wrap up this deployment against the Amalekites in the south. And that's where Samuel is going to catch up with him. Verse 13, Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, Oh, blessed be you to he who is. I have performed the commandment of he who is. So he sees Samuel coming toward him at Gilgal, and he's all excited because he's done great things in this war and killed a lot of Amalekites. And he wants to greet Samuel in the midst of all that excitement. But Samuel is upset because he already knows that Saul didn't follow the rules. And so he says back to him sarcastically, "What then is this bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen that I hear?" These are the animals that they brought back from the Amalekite territories, even though they'd been told that they were to kill all the animals there. So Saul said back to him, "Oh, they've brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice to He who is your God, and the rest we've devoted to destruction. So it's okay, Samuel. Those are just sacrifices that the people wanted to make to God. They're going to be dead too very soon here. Everything else we destroyed just like we were supposed to." Samuel said to Saul, "Stop. I will tell you what He who is said to me this night." And he said to him, "Well, speak." Samuel said, "Though you are little in your own eyes, are you not the head of the tribes of Israel?" Now that's a reference back to just a few years ago when Saul was saying, "I don't know why anyone would consider me for kingship because I'm from the little tribe of Benjamin and I'm from a small clan inside of that tribe and a small family. So why should I be king?" And then when they were ready to make him king on that day, he was kind of hanging out with the baggage. So Samuel says, "You know what? You started out well. And God took you out of that humility and He made you the head of the United Tribes of Israel. He who is anointed you king over Israel. And He who is sent you on a mission and said, 'Go devote to destruction the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed.' Why then did you not obey the voice of He who is? Why did you pounce on the spoil and do what is evil in the sight of He who is?" So he's being rough on Saul, saying, "What is your major malfunction? How is it that you were sent on an absolute annihilation mission and you brought back spoils of war?" Verse 20, Saul said to Samuel, "I have obeyed the voice of He who is. I've gone on the mission on which He who is sent me. I've brought Agag, the king of Amalek, and I've devoted the Amalekites to destruction. But the people took the spoil, sheep and oxen, the best of the things devoted to destruction, to sacrifice to He who is your God in Gilgal." Now, we might take note here, as some people do, that Saul repeatedly uses this phrase, "He who is your God," not "He who is my God." And that very well may indicate his mindset, that he is the king of Israel, but he's not the religious guy. That he's doing the work of God, but Samuel's the one that's tied in with God. And that's not good, if that is the case of what's being indicated by that language. But he tries to excuse his misbehavior, his disobedience, on the actions of the people, which is never appropriate. Leaders are supposed to lead, not throw their people under the bus when they do the stuff the people want. And so Saul has made the excuse, "We did this to do something good for God. We kept some of the animals alive to bring back here to sacrifice to Him." See, trying to make it sound like it was a good idea. And that's when Samuel offers this, I think, very memorable response. And I used to use this with my kids when I was teaching in a Christian elementary school. When I gave them an assignment and they chose to do something other than the assignment. And sometimes it was a nice thing that they were doing, but they weren't doing the assignment. And when they tried to make the excuse, I would say part of the words of this saying from Saul. And then they would always have to follow up and finish it, which is, to obey is better than sacrifice. To heed is better than the fat of rams. See, we should always do what we're told, not what we think would be good to do instead of what we were told. Obedience is our priority. So verse 22, Samuel said, "Has he who is as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of he who is?" See, does God like smelling the burning of sacrifices more than he likes obedience? Is that what you think, Saul? "Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, to heed or to listen than the fat of rams." That's Hebrew parallelism there. "For rebellion," that is disobedience, "is as the sin of divination, and presumption," that's where you think you know better, "is as iniquity and idolatry." Now, Samuel brings up two things that Saul apparently had been working to eradicate from the kingdom: divination and idolatry. He'd been working hard at that to get rid of that from the boundaries. But the fact that he disobeyed a direct order, Saul is told, is as bad as idolatry and messing around in the spirit world, the very things that he was trying to eradicate. Now listen to this next part. This is very important. I think we're in the late second, maybe early third part, or the early part of the third year of Saul's kingdom. So he has not been on the throne very long. And listen to what he's about to be told from God through Samuel. "Because you have rejected the word of he who is, he has also rejected you from being king." That's what God had been talking to Samuel about last night, is that God was done with Saul. He was ready to start focusing on somebody else. And Samuel had tried to talk God out of it, but God told him otherwise. Now that comes as a shock to Saul. "And Saul said to Samuel," verse 24, "I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of he who is and your words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice." Yes, I screwed up, but I did it with the best intentions. And I did it because that's what the people were pushing me to do. Verse 25, "Now therefore, please pardon my sin. Return with me that I may worship he who is." So, "Samuel, I'm sorry. I screwed up. Yes, I did it with the best of intentions. I did it because of pressure from the people, but I did screw up and I'm sorry. Please forgive me for that. Let's go worship. Just come with me. Let's go worship with the people as a celebration for the victories against the Amalekites. Verse 26, "Samuel said to Saul, I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of he who is, and he who is has rejected you from being king over Israel." And as Samuel turned to go away, so Samuel delivers this ultimatum: "I am not going to the worship ceremony with you. I am not going to go there and help you offer as sacrifices to God, animals that you should have killed and left in place. So he turns around and he's about to storm away. And that's when Saul sees the skirt of his robe and it tore. Now, skirt here is kind of misleading in our English. What we're talking about here is the fringe area, the edge of the outer garment of Samuel, which always had this purple prominence attached to it. It's either an actual fringe along the edges of the robe, or it might be little pom-pom sorts of things that are sticking down from the corners of these pieces of clothing. They were always worn on the outside as a reminder through the day, you are a member of the covenant with God. See, because they'd see this purple color in their field of vision, sometimes just in the edge of their peripheral vision. And that color flash was supposed to remind them, you belong to God, act like it. So as Samuel turns around and starts to storm off, Saul reaches out and grabs a hold of his clothes and gets a hold of that specific remembrance fringe, and he rips it by accident. Very inappropriate. First of all, grabbing the prophet of God, inappropriate. Saul is much younger than Samuel, I would assume. Probably Samuel is probably in his early 60s, and Saul is probably somewhere in his 40s. So elder and subordinate violation here. Also, Saul is king while Samuel is the prophet of God. So inappropriate in that fashion as well. The tearing of the purple, not good, because that was a special component of the clothing. So Samuel said to him, and I'd like to see the body language in all of this. I'd like to have seen how Samuel turned back around and maybe looked at the torn piece of his clothing and glared back at Saul. And then he said this. He gets this prophetic utterance that comes through him. He who is has torn the kingdom of Israel from you this day and has given it to a neighbor of yours who is better than you. So just like you tore this purple fringe of the covenant, God is tearing you away from his covenant. You are not his king anymore. Yeah, you're going to be in the office for a lot longer, but God has somebody else that he's going to start grooming and working with. And so we continue. Verse 29, also, the glory of God will not lie or have regret, for he is not a man that he should have regret. So God is not going to be sorry about the choice that he's made in no longer working with you as king and instead working with somebody else. Then he, meaning Saul, said, I've sinned. Yet honor me now before the elders of my people and before Israel. Return with me that I may bow before he who is your God. So even with all of this negativity, all this bad blood that's between the two of them now, the only thing that Saul seems to be concerned about is public appearance. Saul is getting ready to go to a public worship ceremony, and he wants Samuel to be there as kind of God's seal of approval. Because if Samuel doesn't show up, the people are going to wonder what's going on. So apparently it's at this moment that God tells Samuel, go. I've got another job for you. Verse 31, so Samuel turned back after Saul and Saul bowed before he who is. Then Samuel said, "Bring here to me Agag, the king of the Amalekites." And Agag came to him cheerfully. Now, the wording here might actually mean, and it's very strange, might actually mean he comes out tied up. He's in bondage. But he's thinking, listen to this. Agag said, this is happening in his head, "Surely the bitterness of death is past." So he's thinking that this is the point at which I'm going to get amnesty from the king of Israel. Because after all, I'm the king of the Amalekites. I should be treated as a non-combatant. So he thinks he's safe because he didn't die in the war. But Samuel said to him in verse 33, "As your sword has made women childless, so shall your mother be childless among women." And then Samuel hacked Agag to pieces before he who is in Gilgal. Now, this had to have been a huge shock. When I pictured in my mind, I see Samuel with Saul at his side and Agag right in front of him, say these words to Agag, the enemy, "As you killed and hacked apart Israeli people, you're about to be hacked apart." And I think that he may have reached over and grabbed Saul's sword out of his sheath, because Saul should have killed him earlier, and just starts whacking at him, killing him right there in front of everybody. There's blood going everywhere. Now, this had to have been a huge shock in the midst of this ceremony of celebration, especially with the old prophet being the one that does this suddenly in the ceremony. And this is pretty much the end of any good relationship between Samuel the prophet and Saul the king. Verse 34 says, "Then Samuel went to Ramah." That's his hometown, a little bit north of where Jerusalem is today. It's the modern city of Ramallah, apparently. "And Saul went up to his house in Gibeah of Saul." Now, Gibeah of Saul is just a few miles south of Ramah. Gibeah was Saul's hometown, and it seems to be functioning as the capital city of his kingdom. Verse 35, "Samuel did not see Saul again until the day of his death." Now, the wording there is a little bit unfortunate in our English. It means that they did not have official interaction again during the rest of Saul or Samuel's life. They will be in each other's presence, but it will be in an unofficial capacity. And we'll talk about that when it happens. But Samuel grieved over Saul. So he sees Saul as a great big failure and a great big blot on his own record as the leader of Israel, the spiritual leader of Israel. And one more time we read, "And he who is regretted that he had made Saul king over Israel." And this is, again, that same word that means an exasperated sigh. It's not that God didn't see this coming, and therefore he's like, "Man, that didn't turn out the way I wanted it, or the way I thought it would." This is more like it breaks God's heart that it turned out exactly as he knew it would. And that is, the type of king that the Israelis were looking for was Saul. A guy that would look good in a uniform and that would be really big in military fights and in military parades and in military celebrations afterwards and in all the spoils of war. That's the type of guy they were looking for, and that's the type of guy they got, and that's not the type of guy that God wanted them to have. And so that's why when we come back next week, we will begin the story of David, the first king of the type that God wanted the Israelites to have.